The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Good
morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler
and
Wayne Carpenter.
And we are here as Jefferson State of Mine, M-I-N-E.
Mine.
Broadcasting live from downtown Reading at the KCNR studios. 96.5 is where you can hear us on the radio. FM, where the music does sound better. 1460 AM, your talk radio. And we're streaming live worldwide on KCNR1460.com. That's KCNR1460.com. And we also archive forever.
And ever.
So if you go to that website, you go to programming, you go to Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E. You'll be able to hear us anytime. If you have a question or a comment, phone number is 530-605-4567. We're going to talk this morning about Tina Peters, and I have a bit of an outline here. I'll read as we get started. Janet's done a lot of study on this, and so we're going to be discussing this whole situation. Also, we are going to have a request that people call the governor of Colorado, Governor Jared Polis. And we'll give that number out, but we'll explain and unpack this thing. Let's start with Tina Peters. Well, she was convicted, and I believe sentenced, I think it was October 24th of last year, was convicted of three counts of conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, first-degree official misconduct, and a violation of duty and failing to comply with the Secretary of State. Now, all that kind of sounds a bit nebulous, and I'm going to come back to that and kind of tie that into what I think one of the arguments of the Shasta County Board was against the issue of an initiative, which we'll talk about that. She was found not guilty of identity theft, one count of conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, and, you know, she rejected a lot of that. And in those instances, Peters had used the identity of a security badge owner, Gerald Wood, without his permission. But that was false because Gerald Wood did know that she was using that badge. Now the Judge Barrett, said the ballot recounts showed no discrepancies. In fact, his quote is, "I've let you go on long enough about this. The votes are the votes." Now, we're talking about Mesa County, Colorado. Mesa County is the most conservative county in Colorado. And Colorado is definitely a blue state. By the way, that judge is a Democrat.
There you go.
Matt Crane, who is the county clerk's associate director, said he was threatened and his family was threatened by supporters of Peters. And we heard that a bit in Shasta County that our ex-ROV officer felt threatened, and that you know, that people were did she actually say that she was afraid of physical harm, Kathy Darling Allen?
Oh boy,
I don't remember if she said that or not.
I don't recall,
but she said that she had been threatened and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I remember her saying about being threatened, but I don't know if she specifically said physical harm. I don't know.
Okay, and then and he also is a Democrat. Jenna Griswold, who's the Secretary of State, who's also a Democrat, said that Colorado's elections are the nation's standard, and I'm proud of how we have responded to the list of people that have actually disputed that position in Colorado, that their voting records were correct and that the votes were all the votes and that everything was on the up and up. And she said that basically, this is a quote from her, "I'm proud of how we have responded to the first insider's election breach in the nation and look forward to another successful and secure election in November." She said that Colorado is the nation's gold standard when it came to elections.
And what this whole thing was about Tina Peters, who decided that there was fraud going on in the election through the use of the machines. And so she took some steps to try to prove that there was fraud going on.
And had somebody outside, an outsider look at it, is what happened.
And that's where this whole thing comes from, is that she was trying to demonstrate that the machines were being hacked, were being used to bring
about. It's the methodology that she used that they tried to convict her on. Now
did she?
Well, they did convict her.
Did she have the authority? Did she have the jurisdiction? Did she have the responsibility to do what she did?
Well, according to Phil Weiser, who is the attorney general of the state attorney general, he said the sentence is fair and just. She got 9 years in prison, and he said that, I want to be clear, our elections are safe and fair. That was his quote. And basically,
and how does he know that unless they did their homework and did the research?
Well, she did get convicted by 9 jurors. I mean, she got convicted, but she didn't get convicted. The charges are the bogus part of this. Stop and think about this. She wasn't found guilty of identity theft. She wasn't found guilty of anything other than a violation of duty. What does that mean? Misconduct, and failing to comply with the Secretary of State. And as we go to that one point where she was convicted of failing to comply with the Secretary of State, if the Secretary of State's position is unjust and unconstitutional,
right,
and the Attorney General,
then she's in
this
right.
case, agrees, of course she is.
Yeah.
She was convicted of questioning the outcome of an election.
Well, you know, and the methodology she used, again, she had the guy's consent, this guy's consent, when she had this other gentleman go ahead and look at what was going on with these machines. And she was correct in it.
So then, if he had not been an outsider, would it still been okay? If she'd had a staff member who was equally qualified to look at the machines, would they have convicted her of that as well?
I think they would have convicted her of anything.
No matter what.
No matter what. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean,
yeah.
Constitutionally, you talk about your rights being violated.
This is the same as Letitia James saying that Trump is a convicted felon on 34 counts of non-crimes. And what she did was non-crimes.
Well, yeah.
She was convicted of questioning the outcome of an election.
Well, no, she was convicted of not complying with an unjust position that the Secretary of State held. That's what she's convicted of. She didn't comply, even though it was wrong, even though what the secretary, and then the judge said that they did the recount, and the attorney general said they did the recount. Everybody said they did the recount, and when they did the recount, everything was copacetic. Everything was fine.
Well, if you recount the same garbage that you have in the first place,
Amen.
It's going to come out the same.
Garbage Amen. In, garbage out.
That's
out.
Right.
Yeah, that's
well,
always
it says
the way
we
it
have 10, and I counted them. There's 10.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't prove anything.
We've counted these fraudulent votes 17 times, and they always come out with the same answer.
We don't understand what she's thinking. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the violation of duty, what is violation of duty?
Right.
I mean, your duty, if you're an elected official, or even at that point, in appointed, if her position was appointed or elected, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
isn't your first particular position to uphold the Constitution of the United States?
You swear, and to the state of your
country, and your
which
state
you reside.
Constitution.
Yeah.
So if you have a situation where something's illegal and something doesn't match up, she was doing her duty. Mm-hmm. But not according to the Secretary of State. I'd be interested in seeing if the Attorney General of Colorado has the same power that the Attorney General of California has, which is almost absolute.
Well, you have the Secretary of State, you have all these other layers before you get to her, and they're all apparently Democrat, right? And then who was put on the jury? Who was put on the jury? What did they put on the jury? Meaning,
select the jury.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. So if you're going to have garbage in, you're going to have garbage out. So they're putting all these garbage people in there with that mindset. So then they're going to, of course, they're going to
convict her. Are you talking about the jury people were all garbage people?
Those folks and the people that are above that in the Secretary of State.
But they didn't convict her of the real crimes. They didn't convict her of identity theft. They didn't convict her of conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation. They didn't convict her of that. It's sort of like when you went to see Carlos Zapata, right? Okay, even though there was a lot of outside action this
far. Oh, you mean his case?
In his case.
Yeah.
Carlos Zapata's case, you know, the water case, the spilling of water.
But, right.
You know, even though Nathan Pinckney had said he was going to get a firearm and do what he was going to do, even though that happened, it was irrelevant to the case. And did the guy spill the water or not spill the water? Did she do this and not obey the Secretary of State or not? She didn't obey the Secretary of State. But she got 9 years for this.
For disobeying.
9 years.
A
wrongful law.
Right.
A wrongful position. A wrongful outcome.
Right.
What I found particularly egregious were the comments made by the judge against her. They were beyond what you would expect from a judge in a courtroom. He called her a charlatan.
Yep.
Let's see, get into... Oh, he said that she was seeking fame and became fixated on voting problems after becoming involved with those who had questioned the accuracy of the presidential election results.
And they specifically mentioned Lindell.
Yes, and that's what her problem was, that she had the audacity to question the results of an election.
And that's what it says.
He said that she was an election denier, she was unapologetic about what happened.
Unbelievable.
She said she was trying to root out the fraud for the greater good. But the judge just went on and on. I've let you go on about this. Now just shut up. We're not going to hear you anymore. At the end of the day, you cared about the jets, the podcasts, and the people fawning over you. It was outrageous, the things he said. That was not an unbiased judge.
And that was from an Associated Press article, which was very slanted.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
How slanted was that article, Janet?
That was terrible. Even the Washington Examiner and the Denver Gazette were kinder to her.
Exactly.
At least they tried to be in the middle and give both sides.
Well, they were calling Mike Lindell the election denier and all that stuff.
Since when is that a crime? Since when is it a crime to question the outcome of an election?
Since when is it a crime of failing to comply with the Secretary of State when the Secretary of State is so far out of line on this?
And they're wrong. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. There was a request. I was on Steve Stern's call the other day. And it's Steve Stern, America First. And... that people were being asked to call the governor. So if you feel so inclined, you can call the governor's office, Governor Jared Polis, area code 303-866-2471, area code 303-866-2471. I would just leave something like, you know, please pardon Tina Peters. She has had her constitutional protected rights violated. She's been unjustly, you know, put in jail. Well, I think she's on house arrest, but.
She is appealing, obviously, and she has asked that to be released while the case is under appeal, and they have denied her case, according to the newspapers.
Yeah, she's at home and, But the thing is if you want to call the governor again, it's Governor Polis at 303-866-2471. Now, the thing I look at when that appeal was made, and I made some phone calls, and I think people should, but the situation is that we have Polis, who is going to run for the presidency of the United States. He's a Democrat. We have Weiser, who is the Attorney General, and he is, guess what? He is a Democrat. And we also have Gina Griswold, who's the Secretary of State, which is, guess what, a Democrat. Now, the thing that my concern is that, you know, you have a situation when you have a guy who's running for president in that governorship, and his base is the Democrats. His base is not a conservative or, we're hoping to appeal to his nobler side, if there is such a thing.
Well, and he's not doing it fair and balanced. So, governor, he should be neutral because he represents everybody in
the
state.
And Tina Peters' defense in essence, was that she was trying to preserve the records to access the voting system to find out whether or not they had been hacked. That's what she was
doing. She just wanted to find, she was trying to preserve it as it stood to find out if it had been hacked. That's
exactly.
All it is.
That's it.
So she's in trouble for preserving it.
Yes.
They tried to make it, they tried to use the methodology in which she used. Remember, she went on trial at first for saying that she basically stole identity. Well, she didn't.
And was
this guy knew what was going on. He knew what was going on. So, you know, when she used that card. So the thing is that we have in the most conservative county in the state of Colorado, we have an absolute cluster when it comes to, and in that state, who runs that state. And again, I think the Secretary of States that are in these blue counties, or excuse me, blue states, are well out of their realm of the Constitution and preserving that and protecting that. We're supposed to have fair and balanced votes, elections. We're supposed to have Article 4, Section 4. We are supposed to be a representative government, and we're never to be ever, ever, ever to have that taken away. I mean,
the mere fact that she has been denied her right to question is a violation of her First Amendment freedom of speech rights. And now the federal government is stepping in and saying, let's take a closer look at
this. But they can't do anything.
I know, but they're just saying, well, on the basis of a violation of her constitutionally protected First Amendment right to freedom of speech, I think is the door through which they're trying to enter.
I'm going
to
quote Trump. He has six attorneys. Six. That he tried to get on this thing. Six attorneys. And these six attorneys, because of the jurisdiction that we don't have in the federal government over this, which we had been talking about on this program for a long time, the state has jurisdiction.
Exactly.
The attorney general has jurisdiction. The governor has jurisdiction, and the secretary of state has jurisdiction. Go ahead, Janet.
Oh, and the federal government is questioning whether or not this was politically motivated as a prosecution. But, of course, it is completely within the state. But the federal government is asking questions, and then they're getting criticized for at least asking questions.
Well, you know, the main thing is that President Trump, God bless him, is saying, hey, we need to get her out of there. And they do. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that, you know, we're allowing our government to be so far out of whack. And when you have something that's completely controlled by the Democrats.
Yeah. Keep going.
Oh, that's interesting. I just got a note here from our producer, but I'm not going to bring it up.
Squirrel.
Anyway, go ahead, Lynn. What were you saying?
No, you were saying.
Oh,
I was
saying.
I was telling you to keep going, not to get
distracted by looking at this
and
note.
And yet you did.
Okay, sorry about that. So the thing is that we have to be looking at the Secretary of State of Colorado and really and truly, you know, where her position is as far as, how long she's going to let this go on and if she is going to maybe show some leniency. But the president can't pardon anybody.
No,
only the governor can.
No, we're not looking at a pardon. Obviously, this is a state issue as far as the prosecution goes, but the federal government is looking at it as malicious prosecution on the part of the state and her First Amendment rights. But they're just questioning, and they're getting criticized for saying, hey, we've got some questions here. Don't you dare ask questions of us. You can't do that.
Yeah. You know, the whole thing is how do we get her out?
Well, the governor, who you said, is wanting to run for president,
yes,
right?
Yes, definitely.
Well, this is not going to help his case for a race. It's going to hurt him so wholeheartedly because people everywhere other than Colorado are going to – maybe people in Colorado, I hope there'd be some, that would look at it hard and fast and say absolutely no way. No way. And then that would be one of the first things that they would talk to him about when they're all paneled up there talking and giving their soundbite of what they want to do and how they're going to do it. So first thing they would ask is, are you going to treat the rest of the nation like you treated Colorado? Are you going to treat the rest of the nation like you treated the ROV? Are you going to treat the rest of the nation? And just the list goes on. So what's he going to do? How's he going to get out of that? He can't.
Well, let me ask you this, okay? I'm going to play devil's advocate here a little bit. Why does he care? You see, the thing is that you're not, a Democrat running for president isn't going to win over the Republican base. It's never going to happen, ever. He has his own base. He has an attorney general that is a Democrat, a judge that was a Democrat. He has a secretary of state who's a Democrat. He had a DA that's a Democrat. And the people in the jury, I believe, if it's Mesa, where she was tried, has a conservative Republican base.
Never
underestimate. So you're trying to say that, are you trying to say that everybody on that jury was a...
It depends on what they were fed.
That's what I said.
Absolutely.
That's
depends
exactly
on what they were fed
right.
in the case of the court, of how the attorney spun everything.
That's right.
Never underestimate the ignorance of a jury.
And what they can consider, too, because there could be a boatload of information that could counter everything that is unlawful that they're doing, and the jury gets to hear none of it, gets to see none of it.
And she complained that there was information that she could not bring out.
Well, here's the thing that's important. She wasn't found guilty of identity theft, so they said, no, she's not guilty. She wasn't convicted on conspiracy. She wasn't convicted on criminal impersonation. She was never convicted.
What was she convicted on?
I told you at the beginning. She was convicted on misconduct, whatever the hell that means.
Right.
She was convicted on a violation of duty. Okay, they could have proven that it was a violation of duty because she did not comply with the Secretary of State. So they could tie that into complying with the Secretary of State. How does she get 9 years for that?
But it all boils down to she was convicted of questioning the outcome of the election.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. And the thing is, did the jury get to hear the
No, and she says no, that she didn't get a chance to present all the evidence in her trial.
There you go.
Well, she didn't. I know Dr. Frank had some, he was even used in that particular court case. He was used verbally in that, and it was all taken out of context because he wasn't even talking to her.
Hmm. And again, it was a matter of, it doesn't matter if the election was fraudulent and you have proof. All we care about is that we don't like the way you did it, and so you go to jail for 9 years. And
there you go.
That's exactly what was happening at the end of the 2020
election. Remember, the sentencing is the judge.
That's the sentencing, not
the jury.
And he was totally biased.
You think?
Yep, I do.
Dolores, what say you? We've got about 2 minutes to the break. What say you?
Hey, just listening to you talking about the election, and I'm hearing everything what you're saying. It sounds like almost the same thing, you know, that I've been hearing for a while. But I just was going to ask, why are we not doing the same thing here locally? Here, I know that I'm not well-liked because when I speak, because I use my freedom of speech the way we should. Everything that I went through is the same thing that, you know, being accused of something I never did. You know, Mike Mangus went out there and said that I was actually charged with felony election fraud. When I have documents here saying preparing false document evidence. How do you prepare false evidence? I don't even know how. But that's the difference, you know, that Mike Mangus went out to destroy my reputation. So, you know, it's been ongoing, and you ought to know there's other evidence that I have regarding one of the investigators from the DEA. Actually, when he went out there door to door, he went in and questioned everybody in regarding the election, because I reported, you know, election, and then there was somebody who from out of the city came and started gathering, you know, signatures, which is prohibited for someone to do that. So I reported it to an attorney, and then I hired an attorney. It cost me $20,000. How can I report something that I saw in what was happening? As a public official, I had a right to report that. But yet they targeted me. They came after me and claiming all kinds of things. And then the DA also attacked me, claiming all kinds of things. But there was an investigator who went door to door to talk to witnesses. In his own recording, you could hear it. He bribed one of the witnesses, bribed them to say, hey, come and see us after you testify. We'll give you a job. Even though your certificate or whatever your security guard is expired. But we know you we'd probably could give you a job in where we work. How do you do that? Bribe a witness, the main witness. See, there's not everybody doesn't know all the whole story, but yet everybody's using the same lie repeated against me to retaliate against me, to shut me down. I'm still fed up with this.
Yeah, it seems like it's a bit rampant. We've got to go out for our break, Dolores. So thank you very much for the call. And with that, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Nursery is celebrating 50 years in business. Yep, 50 years. Seems like yesterday our nursery and landscape business was just a little seedling itself. But the truth is, we've been serving Shasta County for 50 years, growing shrubs, trees, and veggie plants since 1975. It's the 50th anniversary sale now, all through springtime. With all shrubs and trees and ground covers 1 gallon or larger, 30% off. We have a good selection of spring shade bloomers such as azaleas and camellias, and many other sun blooming plants to enhance your landscape in those sunny locations in the yard. This is a perfect time of the year to start preparing your vegetable garden. We have organic soils and fertilizers, including a full line of John and Bob's Organics, and we carry non-GMO seeds. So rest assured, you can have a healthy planting crop in your vegetable garden. All shrubs and trees and ground covers 1 gallon or larger are 30% off. If you have not been to Gold Leaf Nursery, we invite you to check us out and see for yourself why we have so many customers tell us what a unique nursery we have. Gold Leaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course and 1/4 mile from Airport Road.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and they can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Just clear one thing up here real quick, and then we have someone calling in who's going to give us an update. Let me be clear.
Be clear.
What Tina Peters was not convicted of was identity theft. What she was not convicted of was counts of conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation. She was not convicted of those things. She was basically convicted of these BS charges of first-degree official misconduct, violation of duty in failing to comply with the Secretary of State. Those are just BS charges.
So two charges she was convicted of are essentially
made
up.
Those are the three charges she was convicted of.
They're essentially made up, and they are carrying a 9-year sentence. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Good Lord.
So the stuff that she didn't do identity theft. The guy knew what was going on. Apparently, he had a connection with Lindell. The guy's name was Gerald Wood. Gerald Wood. And he had a connection with Lindell. From what I understand. Anyway, we have a caller on the line. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Richard. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, that's salt and battery on my
right there. Jen and I are filing charges.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, you better be careful. All citizens arrest you for assault.
Hey, I got a future here, man.
Not
I'm the birthday singer. You heard the wedding singer. I'm the birthday singer, man.
Your future, 9 years in prison.
That's not funny. It's not funny for her either. Anyway, what you got, buddy?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, a couple of things, actually. Wanted to give you an update on our petition. Also wanted to give you an update on a new bill being presented in California, yes, to again continue to demolish the elections process. And you're going to be kind of blown away when you hear me describe this bill. So I'll go with the petitions first. It's going really well. The support is overwhelming. People, Trump wants voter ID. Assemblyman DeMaio is looking for voter ID. We are looking for voter ID and a multitude of other things. So it's great. It's a trifecta, local, state, and federal. And that's actually helping us immensely at this local effort. And I know there's some concerns thinking, well, this is going to violate state law, this and that. Some of it does skirt state law. Some of it does push the envelope. But also quite a bit of it does not push any state law issues. So we will, if we get the signatures, we will get something in our charter because some of the things we ask for are not against state law. So we will get them in our charter. We just need the signatures and then the vote of the citizens next year. So we're really looking forward to this. It's so positive. People are really happy that we have this effort. And people are asking us, hey, where's the Carl DeMaio petition? I'm telling them, well, it's not printed yet, but it should be coming soon. And some people are asking me, hey, do you have the Newsom recall petition yet? And I'm like, no. So if people are ready to start signing multiple petitions. That's different because usually when you have multiple petitions, it kind of turns people off. But I think people are ready to just start signing.
Well, so how many signatures is what's your target signature count?
We need a minimum of 6,800. We're going to try to achieve 8,600 for a 20% buffer. And right now, there's some numbers we will not put on the air. But what I will tell you right now is we are doing our unofficial validation process, just like we did with Recall Shasta.
Okay.
And we have an 89% unofficial validation rate right now. So our validation rate is huge. It's very, very good. So we're doing very well.
That's awesome. Okay.
Now, tell me about the new law.
So, oh my gosh.
Oh, before you go there, I'm sorry. Let me interrupt. When do you have to have these signatures done and complete to submit? Sorry.
September 17, close of business, and We, and again, our website, SaveShastaElections.org, has all the information you need to donate or volunteer or even find our future signing locations when we put them on the calendar.
Okay.
Can you give that website one more time, buddy? Slowly.
Yes. SaveShastaElections.org.
Perfect. Thank you.
Everybody check that maybe on a weekly basis, and because things change, especially as we add signing locations. So yeah, and we would still like some more volunteers. By the way, we're averaging, Terry, you know this from recall days, the state average on petition signatures is 2 or 3 per hour, okay? And Terry knows this. During recall Shasta, we had, we attended the fairgrounds, outside the fairgrounds, and we were getting 7 or 8 per hour, which was really good.
Good.
And you know, here's what we're getting now, by the way, and this is another number I will release. Right now, at our normal signing locations, we're getting 7 and 8 per hour. It is absolutely stupendous.
Wow, that's awesome.
People are wanting, yes, people want election reform.
good.
Yes. Anyway, but we still need a couple dozen more volunteers. Otherwise, you know, we don't want to go. We don't want to get burned out, right? We still have 4.5 months left, so it'd be nice to kind of. This is a marathon. Anyway, so appreciate any support from anybody else.
Okay, thank you for that update. Now you're going on to
Assembly Bill 331. Oh, it's a doozy. Let me preface this. Do we remember last election cycle when our Board of Supervisors declared under duress the certification? Yes, we all remember that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some certain verbiage that a certain female election official used at the microphone in the board chambers. The verbiage was administrative and ministerial. Does anybody remember that verbiage?
Hmm.
When Joanna told the
Joanna,
board... you have
waiting for a name. Go ahead.
Yeah. Joanna said, board, you have to declare this. It's mandatory. It is strictly an administrative and ministerial duty.
Okay.
Mm. Guess what? Guess what verbiage is in Assembly Bill 331? Yeah, administrative and ministerial. So, here, hey, I've been reading election laws for 3+ years and the codes, the regulations. I have never seen those words used together in election law until Joanna used them, and now I see them in this bill. So, here's the point. Joanna continues to collaborate with the state, continues to do so, in order to undermine a fair and transparent elections process. Yes, it's right here. It's right here in writing.
Okay.
And another thing, this bill is horrible, by the way.
What does it say?
Generically, it says that the county elections official shall declare, because it is a administrative and ministerial duty. And let me scroll up. I highlighted it. It also says that the elections officials now, if the elections office refuses to properly perform election laws, it says the Secretary of State may step in and take over those duties. Yeah, you heard me right. You heard me right. Now, does anybody know, is there a registrar in the state of California that is refusing to do their duties?
Just for clarity.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like they're amending the Constitution of California with that, because I know that the Attorney General has sort of the same powers, as you know, Richard, in 513, Article 5, Section 13, California Constitution, over DAs and over the sheriff and over law enforcement. So I wonder if maybe they're trying to enhance that. Go ahead.
So this particular bill is not a constitutional amendment.
Okay.
It is strictly a bill for some future laws. But the point being, as you just heard, is the state is now thinking if we have a rogue registrar, that the state's going to come in and take over the election duties.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, Colorado did it.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, Colorado did it. We were talking about the first half hour of this program.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's exactly what they're looking to do.
Yeah, you think? And that's why, to the point of the governor of Colorado, you know, his nobler side, you know, he needs to have a nobler side. And, again, I want to give that phone number one more time. Stay with us, Rich. I just want to give that phone number one more time. This is Governor Jared Polis. Colorado, free Tina Peters. Free Tina Peters, area code 303-866-2471. 303-866-2471. This is basically what the Secretary of State is trying to do, just like our Attorney General. That was all changed for us in November 4th, 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering about that. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. I have one last part of this new bill, AB 331. You know how churches have been doing, we'll call it ballot harvesting, right, in the last few years. A lot of conservative or right-leaning organizations have been trying to counter the ballot harvesting by basically doing their own ballot harvesting, you know. This bill is going to restrict ballot collections boxes by non-elected officials. So I see this as a retaliation against the conservative ballot harvesters, honestly.
Well, what about, okay, then they can't be left at Holiday Market anymore. They can't be left at Safeway. They can't be left anywhere. They have to go to the ROV. If that's what they're saying, non-elected, you just said, if they're not being taken care of by non-elected, then, hello, the only place that it's elected is the ROV office.
Well, actually, no. The drop-off ballot locations are sanctioned by the elections office at those supermarkets.
Right.
I'm talking more like churches or Rotary Club type people.
Why can't they sanction them there?
Those ballot harvesting locations, they're not eliminated, but they're going to be further restricted. And again, I think this is a retaliation to conservative ballot harvesting.
Let me ask you a question.
I call baloney on that.
Yeah, it is. It's all baloney, my good friend. Except we have to say baloney. We don't want to say baloney, but we have to say baloney because if we don't say baloney, we're going to get bleeped.
Yeah.
See? That's right. Okay, so anyway, is this thing out of committee yet? Is it in committee yet?
It was introduced in January, last amended April 21. So, yeah, it's sitting in some committee. It's already been amended
twice. Only the committee. So, I mean, that's the thing. We get a lot of talk on these bills, but it's got to go to committee first. And I get excited about a bill, not excited, but interested in a bill when it comes out of committee, not because then it has to go back to the Assembly and the Senate.
Hey, Rich, is either one of our Assembly or Senate representatives for District 1 on that committee?
He doesn't even know if it's in committee.
No. It is in committee. It's being amended, which means a committee is amending it. But,
yeah, so that means the committee is listed.
But just understand, I understand Terry's point that you're interested once it's out of committee, but also just understand when an elections law is going to restrict a fair and transparent election, you can pretty much take it to the bank. It's going to make it out of committee and get voted for in the state house.
Well, anything the Democrats, because they're always going to be, if there's 11, they're going to be 8-3. But here's the question Wynn had, and I like the question. Wynn just made a great point. Is there any of our elected officials, Senator, or excuse me, I guess it would be Assembly, is there any of our Assembly people that are Republicans that are on that committee? Because apparently that's public knowledge, right?
It should be listed, yeah.
It should be listed?
Oh, yeah.
If there's a committee, it would be listed.
We need to know who they are.
Yeah.
And who
introduced the bill?
Who is the one
Assembly member that introduced the bill?
Yeah, it was, let me get it here. It's Melalini, some kind of a weird name like that. So it's been out of a couple of committees. Kearney sits in the committee entitled Communication on Public, maybe Safety, something like that. So yeah, it's been through several committees already. So this is going to go through, unfortunately. Anyways, just keep an eye on it. I'll keep an eye on it, keep you guys updated. But this is a pretty horrendous election bill.
Oh yeah, there's a million of them. I know.
Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate the time today, folks, and please come see us when you see a finding location.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you. And to your brother.
And to your brother.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Bye.
Strange how both brothers were born on the same day.
It is. So, no more calls from the mystery guest, huh?
Ooh. Well, you could tell who the mystery guest was. We got a call from
that. Well, we don't, you know, I can't substantiate that. Only my producer and your producer and our producer could substantiate that because I didn't answer the phone. So I don't know.
It's reported that.
So yeah, I mean, you know, this whole thing, you know, is BS with Tina Peters. And, you know, I think that it, like Rich said, I mean, that's what's happening in the states, every blue state. You know, I just, for the life of me, we need to start thinking maybe more outside the box. This is kind of in your wheelhouse, Wynn. more outside the box in how we make an effect on these things, because now the Secretary of State in California, the Secretary of State in Colorado, everybody's changing the deal. Okay.
And well, they've had a master plan on this for years. You know that because now they're actually executing it.
Yeah.
You know, so they've been working on it. And you know that that's what's been going on with the blue states. They have their own little powwows, and they go talk about stuff, and they figure out a plan and try to figure out if they can skirt it, you know, constitutionally or legally or whatever. And that's what they do.
Well, see, it all goes back to jurisdiction. Who has the jurisdiction?
Mm-hmm.
Who has the power? Who has the authority? Who has the jurisdiction? And then that means that that particular person can intervene, interpose, get in between, stop whatever's going to happen by nullification, by
right.
nullifying it. And,
right.
And the problem is that I mean, does our president want Tina Peters out of jail? Hell yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but he's helpless. He can't do anything.
Well, he's got six attorneys working on it. Like Janet said, you know, that maybe they're going to go after the fact that she's been constitutionally violated. But it sounds to me like where they got her, what really is bad is the sentence is insane.
9 years. That's cruel and unusual punishment.
You think?
Yeah. And that's constitutional.
And, well, now she's going to appeal, you were saying.
Yes.
Okay. You know, so she has, she can go to the appellate court on this.
And she's in the Ninth Circuit, right?
It's Colorado. I don't know.
I can't remember. There are 11 states in it, and I don't remember.
13.
Oh, 13.
I don't know.
I don't know if Colorado's in it.
I don't know either. Huh. Maybe somebody does know that. If you do, if Colorado's in the Ninth Circuit, we'd like to know. If you know that, you can...
She can ask for a three-judge panel and hopefully get the ones...
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. We got... Yeah, you know... for the Second Amendment case, yeah.
Well, the federal government says that they're looking at it because they fear that her prosecution was oriented more toward inflicting political pain than pursuing actual justice or legitimate governmental objectives.
Yeah, and I don't think the jury, I mean, I'd have to say I don't think the jury felt like she was going to get that, you know, get 9 years.
And that's where this outrageous judge comes in.
Oh, yeah.
So then if they're thinking it's a political pain, then that is coming from the judge politically on the penalty.
Well, the prosecution itself. Prosecuting her the way they did was for political reasons.
But it was compounded by the penalty.
Yeah, Judge Barrett, okay, when he's saying that basically, you know, I've let you go on long enough about this.
Right.
The votes are the votes. You know, because you had 10 and it added to 10, even though... 5 could be illegal, questionable,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the, you know, it's like, you know, and again, I, you know, when I read what she was actually convicted on as opposed to what she was charged with, it's like, what the hell?
Right.
You know, and like Janet said, and she's right, Janet's right, it's all political, when you're right, it's, the whole thing is political. The problem we have now is that we keep saying the same thing. It isn't constitutional. That violates constitutional rights. It isn't legal that they can do that. But they keep doing it.
They keep doing it.
Because there are no consequences.
Well, now just keep in mind we have two judges that are probably going to the hoosegow here on the federal level.
Yep.
So they're starting to chip away at the wall. And those jack wagons that are pulling these kind of stunts are going to start finding themselves on the other side of the law.
Being faced with consequences for your behavior is a great deterrent.
And it even says in the Constitution, the judges serve in good behavior, and the word behavior is capitalized and in bold print. That means something.
Yeah.
Good behavior.
It means they have to do their job.
They have to do their job.
It doesn't mean that you have to be convicted of robbing the local 7-Eleven. It can mean not abiding by the law.
Well, see, here's the thing. The sentence is the crazy part.
Yes.
Okay, if the Secretary of State did something, which she did, that was, probably many things, but did some things that were not constitutional, and you work for this person and you didn't comply with her, because now they're trying to say that's a violation of, I think it went further than the jury was looking at it. In other words, the compliance position in the mind of the prosecutor and in the mind of the judge and in the mind of the attorney general and in the mind of the Secretary of State was totally different than what the jury, I believe, thought it was.
And sometimes
I think that's what happened.
Okay. Sometimes juries have pressure put on them, and when it comes down to it, they
good
say,
point.
"Well, we've got to convict her of something. If we're not going to do this, well, let's just convict her of this."
And then they did. Convictor of those things, not knowing what the penalty
exactly.
could be, because they're not going to be privy to that.
I would like to know how the jury feels about the 9-year sentence.
Exactly.
That'd be a good thing to find out.
Well, I want to know, too, was Tina Peters, her position as the ROV, was it an elected position or an appointed position? Was she hired by the Board of Supervisors to do it?
I don't know.
I'm going to guess it's elected only because of the fact that in that county being so conservative, I'm going to guess it was elected, and I'm also going to guess because of the fact that she didn't serve at the pleasure of the commissioners, apparently.
Right.
Because the commissioners could have fired her.
That's right.
So I don't know, though. I mean, maybe
that, and that's what I come back to. She could have always been fired if she was hired, right?
Right. So that's right. So I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it just, again, it's the whole thing has just gotten to the point where, I mean, look at the J6ers. Look at what happened to Carlos Zapata.
Well,
that's outrageous.
You said that's the most conservative county. So that's what they're doing at the state level. They're infiltrating that county and putting their hand on them and saying, absolutely not. No matter who gets in this position or any position conservatively, as a conservative, you're going to feel the pressure from the state. Much like California's been doing all this time. They're doing the exact same thing.
So how do you pressure a governor who has all his tools on his side of the party? How do you pressure him? Maybe with some Democrats and independents, but really where the pressure has to come from, folks, if you know people in Colorado,
right,
have them call.
Yep.
The
yep.
people in Colorado have to call. The people in Colorado, or maybe something else, maybe call in and leave them. Yeah, I'm just suggesting, well, maybe you don't want to ski in Colorado this year. Maybe you don't want to go to Colorado this year. Maybe you're not going to take that river trip down to Colorado this
but
year.
But be careful how you say that. So it's not
well, the point is that maybe you don't want to. I mean, maybe
right.
you don't, you know, you've got a choice, right? You can
right.
go or not go.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of different things and a lot of ways maybe that you could be thinking about on how to handle this. And I think that's been the main issue with all of this, is we have to get someone who probably doesn't agree with the conservative side of things to free a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the airlines are always saying, we know you have choices on which airline to fly. Thank you for choosing us. Well, we know you have choices on which state to vacation in, and we may not choose Colorado.
That's a good, well, yeah.
There you go.
I think that's what, yeah. I think that could be something. I mean, you know, whatever the case may be, but really if you know people in Colorado, I'm going to give that phone number one more time. Area code 303-866-2471. 303-866-2471. It's Governor Jared Polis.
And that's to free Tina Peters.
Free Tina Peters. And you know, the thing is that if in fact you know people in Colorado, please have them call. We've got to nip this in the bud. And the president's doing everything he can. I mean, he's got to be fit to be tied. I'm sure the six attorneys he's working with have to be fit to be tied. Everybody is. The problem is, again, jurisdiction, interposition, and nullification. If we don't start learning that as a people, we're going to be screwed.
Right.
And we just do not understand that.
Right.
And people have to. People have to understand that position.
Yes.
Okay? And frankly,
what happens when it's you?
Yeah, what happens when it's you? And you never know.
Yeah.
And by shining a bright light on the injustices, it causes changes to be made.
That's right. Exactly.
Yep. I think we should take it to committee, guys. What do you think?
I think so, yes. Committees are
always
good.
If I say that word
good.
Committee to Sally, she reminds me it's almost, that's a congregation of baboons.
And she's right.
Yeah, she's right. I know. She's always
Poor
right.
Word.
That's the problem. Wow. It's always right. I'm going to have to be careful. I'm going to have to go home and move some rocks and dig some holes. New plants, you know. So.
Dig some holes, put the rocks in it.
Well,
dig the rocks
if
back
it
out.
Can happen in California, if it can happen in Colorado, it can happen anywhere. There is some good news, however. 3 members of the Florida legislature have dumped the Democrat Party.
Uh-huh.
They're fed up.
That'd be nice if California had happened there, but that's why time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
Through the madness and the lies, as they're holding back the truth, no matter what they try, I will always fight for you. I our Savior in a sense, they are trying to remove. I am here at your defense.